Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. Today's podcast, we're going to be jumping into a number of UK equities, as well as looking at the key themes in markets out there at the moment. And to do that, we're very kindly joined by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Hello, John. Good to be here again.
Alan, we've been speaking for many months now about the FTSE 100 and how it's disconnected to some extent from the underlying reality of the UK economy. Of course, the FTSE 100 isn't a very good representation of the UK economy. It's very defensive in its nature. There's some major dollar earners in there, which over the last week have been a big support for the FTSE 100, with the weaker pound against the dollar. This morning, once more, we have broken to all-time highs on the FTSE 100, now trading very comfortably above that level of 7,900. But you know, we obviously discuss how the FTSE 100 isn't a representation of the UK economy. But it seems as though this morning that a report from a think tank has suggested that the UK may actually indeed avoid a recession. That seems to be boosting sentiment across the board. So, you know, when we're looking at these moves, Alan, do you think this is a case of momentum starting to build in the FTSE 100 now? I mean, you compare it to the United States, they're still relatively choppy, although they're well off their lows. But when we're looking here in the FTSE 100, it's been more of a steady build to the upside. When we're looking at these reports that are coming out, of course, they're not yet confirmed, and we're seeing the contradictions from the Bank of England that are still predicting a recession, albeit a lot shorter and shallower than they previously thought. Alan, does all this build to a situation that, yes, okay, the companies within it are not operating to a large extent here in the UK, and that they're earning a lot of their revenues from overseas, but just that general sentiment around the UK and its companies that are listed here, do you think that has the potential to see the FTSE gain further from here?
Absolutely. And isn't it great? I mean, this is really positive news. I mean, the National Institute of Economic and Social Research, or NISA, came out today saying that the forecast with the squeeze on incomes will still make it feel like a recession, because obviously, you know, we're paying more for energy bills, we're paying more for food in the shops, inflation is still rampant. As we said last week, what the Bank of England had done, they've managed the situation very well, I think, by painting a very black picture. And now perhaps we're seeing that it's not going to be quite as bad as that. You know, it's still very difficult, and a lot of families I know are suffering as we're talking through this. But certainly, the UK economy is very much based on a cocktail of stocks which are exposed to the global economy. And of course, we're going to talk about BP in a minute, but we've seen our huge oil majors, BP and Shell, produce, or report fantastic profits, and really represents where the markets are right now in terms of they're seeking out energy resources as an alternative, of course, to Russia. And this is a key driver, I think, for the FTSE going forward. And of course, along with that, we've got an economy that's now decoupled from Europe, as it were. We're a Brexit-based economy. We can now go out and pitch for contracts worldwide without the encumbrance of the EU shackles. So that's a good thing, I think, from a business standpoint. I know a lot of people will probably be shouting right now and saying, how could you be so wrong? Brexit's been a disaster. It's not been easy. Yeah, I agree. But I still think going forward that UK PLC can really come out of this very well. But certainly, to come back to the FTSE itself, can it go higher? I mean, we're a few points off 8,000, and I think that's a big barrier. Once we break through that, I think the index could continues to power higher. I mean, there are a few issues that could put the brakes on there. There was a report out this morning, of course, about US Treasury yields rising. And of course, if you know, yields rise as an inverse to the stock market, generally speaking. But of course, that non-farm report last week, you know, showed you know, was very strong indeed. And of course, that that could drive investors, you know, into Treasury, Treasuries once again. And of course, if that happens, then you know, it may put the brakes on any stock market rally for the time being. But fundamentally, we're coming out of COVID. We have some global emerging economies that have been sitting still for two years effectively because of COVID, and those economies will be resurging, and those have to be serviced in terms of raw materials, in terms of technology, all of that. So yes, I think the FTSE will push through 8,000, and I hope that with this cautious, pragmatic approach taken by central banks and the Bank of England, in the case of the UK, will continue to manage and manage expectations going forward, and see the UK economy progress and come out the other end.
Indeed, indeed. Of course, we talk about the FTSE 100, but it's quite interesting also to see what's happening with the FTSE 250 and also the AIM markets. I mean, when you're looking at the global picture, you know, the FTSE 100 does its own thing to some extent over a longer time period. You know, it's not really produced much in the way of returns over the last decade and even longer. It does provide a good yield, but in terms of capital appreciation on the index, there's very little there. But what's quite interesting to see is the FTSE 250 and the AIM market starting to come back to life. And that's really got a high correlation with economic indicators such as UK consumer confidence, of course, GDP figures here in the UK. We've been looking here at what's, you know, the correlation between the AIM market and consumer confidence, because of course it's a market that is dominated to some extent by private investors, especially some of the lower market cap companies there. And when they start to feel good about the economy, they tend to invest more into these smaller companies. And we're really starting to see a pickup now in the AIM. You know, it's been very heavily hit last year, of course, as we saw a deterioration in consumer confidence and other key economic readings here in the UK. But if we do avoid a recession here in the UK, that's going to be a big boost to consumer confidence. It's going to be a big boost to investor sentiment. And they're particularly interesting indices to look at. Of course, they're inherently more risky than the FTSE 100, and the companies in there are particularly volatile. But if you have any favourites there, sometimes you see them and you look at their valuation and compare them to the fundamentals of what the company's doing, and there's a bit of a disconnect when really the trade is dictated by the wider feeling in the investor community. Again, it comes back down to consumer confidence. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out for the rest of the year. And if we do avoid a recession and maybe return to reasonable growth figures towards the end of the year, I think that's going to be very much down to what happens with central banks and inflation. That could be a sector to look at. But Alan, we're going to stick with the FTSE 100 company now for the first stock that we're going to discuss this morning. It's one that's inextricably linked to the UK economy. It's Barratt Developments. Of course, a terrible year last year for the house builders in terms of their share prices. There has been somewhat of a resurgence so far this year. And, you know, looking at the numbers from Barratt's in terms of their trading, January's been more positive than one would think. But what's the main takeaway from their update this morning?
It's a very strong update. But, of course, the issue that they state very clearly in the announcement is that it's that visibility is really hard to call, because the full year outlook depends on how selling in spring goes. And of course, there's we've seen the housing market come off, you know, a fall in housing values, which traditionally should attract people into the market at lower prices. But of course, I think you've got a generation now who are buying houses who have just been used to seeing property just continually rise in value. And with these falls, with the global macro picture so uncertain, that's creating an awful lot more uncertainty. And of course, it's hard for companies like Barratt's to accurately forecast how sales are going to go, because something could happen next week that could provide a huge driver for that. Conversely, something could happen next week that that puts the dampeners on mortgage offerings and all the rest of it. So there are so many factors that are interconnected here. But you know, Barratt's have delivered a good set of results today. Nearly 7% growth in home completions to with adjusted pre-tax profits up to nearly 16% to 521 million at the half-year point. Forward sales at 29th of January were just under 11,000 homes. Last year, it was 15,500 homes. And the value, of course, is 2.65 66 billion. So that's a positive. You've got that forward visibility, not as good as last year. But of course, as I said just now, the issue is with Barratt. Of course, it's how the spring selling season goes. And there are so many variables in that mix. It's really hard to call. But what Barratt has done to try to respond to this, it's cut down on the amount of land approvals it's committed to. And of course, these are how the house builders work. They have a huge land bank on which to develop and build. So there's always work in progress. So Barratt looking forward, it's cut down on the amount of land approvals because, again, with that uncertainty, a pragmatic approach is the best course of action. It's also cutting down on hiring too. So of course, that in itself has a knock-on effect. Less people hired, less jobs. And of course, it's cutting down the amount of site openings too. So we've got all these factors, but I sense that should the company need to, it can ramp up and improve and increase on those hiring, well, both hiring more people, increasing the amount of land it buys back in. I sense it can change that pretty quickly. But certainly the outlook's moderately good. We've obviously, with the forecast from the Bank of England now and the report this morning from NISA that it doesn't look like the UK is going to go into recession. It's all great stuff. But certainly in terms of visibility, it's a bit of a tough one. The Barratt share price is up slightly today, so I think it's been generally well received by the city. And of course, we look at the share price performance for the year. Shares have traded as high as £6.50 on the year, or £6.53, as low as just over £3. Currently trading £4.70, and that's up from the lows in October last year. So I would probably, if I had the shares now, I would hold the shares. You've got a very strong dividend yield of nearly 8%. So that's that in itself is pretty much keeping up with inflation. But would I buy the shares now? Maybe I'd sit on my hands for a while and see if the share price comes back a bit. But still a fairly good outlook, all things considered.
Indeed. As you mentioned there, the upcoming selling period is going to be key for Barratt's. Not only Barratt's, the rest of the house builders. And then just looking at the share price here, very heavily hit last year. But so far this year, year to date, they're up 13%, which is actually quite a lot off their lows as well. So it looks as though there's been an element of the market pricing in a situation which isn't going to be as bad as first thought last year. So, yeah, as you say, Alan, one to watch and certainly a sector to keep an eye on for any weakness. So moving on now, Alan, it's a company that actually reported yesterday. It's BP, but these are definitely worth revisiting today because they're up 3%. Barclays analysts have given BP a bumper £10 price target, so that's roughly double where they are now. So, Alan, obviously looking at the numbers, what do you feel were the key drivers in that very generous price target there?
Well, I think the numbers are quite simply based on the fact that hydrocarbons, given the global energy crisis, given the Russian invasion, and the fact that oil and gas supplies from Russia are literally being turned off, there's a need to find it elsewhere. And although although the lobbyists will be and are protesting furiously at BP's change in plans in this regard, you can understand why the analysts are looking at the company and saying, well, it's got a lot further to go. I mean, record profits, $27.7 billion. That's astonishing. And of course, the outlook for the group, we're looking at 2022 EBITDA of $61 billion, full-year operating cash flow, $41 billion. It's also lowered its net debt to $21.4 billion, which is the lowest for almost a decade. The company's got the strongest upstream plant reliability on record. But of course, BP made a commitment to cut oil and gas production by 40% in 2019. That's now changed. It's now cutting oil and gas production by 25%. It's investing, of course, a huge amount into renewables and into low carbon. En route to its low carbon transition. What it calls the TGEs, the transition growth engines. So the company is definitely making progress in that regard. But of course, global macroeconomics have changed. You know, the fact is that hydrocarbons will be around for longer. And I'm also hearing as well that the much touted EVs, of course, that in fact my wife and I test drove one a few weeks ago, and it was very impressive. But people are now there are stories of people bringing their EVs back to dealers and swapping back to either hybrids or conventional petrol or diesel engines. So simply because of the cost of electricity. So if we have sustained energy costs for a period of time, all of a sudden the compelling economics for owning an EV changes. So I think BP, you know, are realizing this, and of course they're directing their massive resources in the direction where they're needed. But a £10 price target, I think that's quite attainable. You know, given the production, of course, given the cost of oil at the present time, and also the demand now for alternative suppliers. So that applies, of course, to Shell as well, Royal Dutch Shell, that produced a similarly strong set of results. But certainly, you know, BP shares are powering up, and I think you know, you look at the performance yesterday, you look at the performance since July last year, it's been top right hand corner stuff all the way. Shares up a further 3% today on the back of that note. So sky's the limit. And certainly dividend yield of 3.5%. You know, if you're holding BP shares now, continue to hold. And, you know, there's an argument to add too.
Yes, I mean, these are all always companies, including Shell as well. Any weaknesses always at some point bought back into huge cash flows there, huge cash generation from BP over the last year. That's led to increased buybacks as well as an increased dividend. You know, the dividend yield isn't as high as it has been historically, but of course we're coming in a very tough period for BP. So it's going to be interesting to see how this holds up. And now, how long? I think probably the question is that target from Barclays of £10. How long it takes to get up there? Because that's a huge move and a huge creation of market capitalization for BP to get anywhere near that price target. So certainly will continue to be an interesting company and sector to watch for the rest of this year. So staying in the sector, but a slightly different company really focused in the exploration side of things. Deltic Energy, Alan, shares are up, let's have a look here, to about 20% as we speak. What's driving that move?
Yeah, so we spoke about Deltic Energy a few weeks ago, and this is, I think, what's happened at Deltic is indicative of just how important new oil and gas discoveries are for the UK economy, and of course for the global energy supply crisis. So Deltic Energy have a portfolio of assets in the central North Sea, which of course is off Aberdeen and off the East Scotland coast, and then the southern North Sea, which is off the coast off Hull and along. In fact, if you drive up the East Coast as I have frequently, you can see a lot of the rigs actually in the distance when they burn off some of the oil. So Deltic have a bunch of assets. They have the Selene well, which they will be starting to drill shortly, but they have a 30% interest in the Pensacola license, which is being drilled by Shell. And this morning, the reason the shares are up is that they announced a significant oil and gas discovery. In fact, it's so significant, 302 billion cubic feet of gas is the EUR estimated ultimate recovery. So that is pretty strong stuff, and it's one of the largest oil and gas discoveries in the southern North Sea for well over 10 years. So really, a really important, significant discovery. The chief executive, Graham Swindell, said it was a major milestone in the development of the company. And of course, these numbers, it's going to open up a new play in this, of course, mature basin for exploration, discovery, and production. The company's very much looking forward to working with its partners. So the shares have come back really strongly, as you rightly say. The shares are now trading 3.2p, so off slightly off the highs this morning. The company's got a valuation of $51 million. I suggest with a fine like that at 30% stake and the other assets it owns, that still materially undervalues the company. Not forgetting, of course, the company raised $15 million and $2 million in an open offer last year. Michael Spencer, the old City grandee, now has 18.8% of the company in a stake. Currently, he owned just under 17% before that. So, this is a really strong small oil and gas exploration company to own. And I think based on the demand for energy going forward, based on what we've just discussed about BP and, BP reducing its commitment to clean energy, hydrocarbons are the way forward.
Yes, it certainly looks like it is when you're looking at Deltic Energy shares this morning. So, of course, 51 million market cap. It's a racy stock. It's not for the faint of heart, but one would think as that particular discovery is further developed, there could well be some further movement in that market capitalization. So, Alan, moving on to the final stock we're going to discuss today, one that we've discussed on the podcast on numerous occasions, it's ECR Minerals. What's the latest update from them?
Well, ECR, of course, have a portfolio of assets and interests in Australia, predominantly in Victoria, but have recently developed two assets in Queensland. I'll go through them very quickly. There's the Creswick asset, which I'm going to come back to in a second. The Bayliston asset, which includes the Blue Moon project, which the company currently working on. Also, the Tambo license in Eastern Victoria. Then in Queensland, the Lulworth Range asset, which is near to Townsville. This is an asset that has a multitude of historical workings, and the company recently discovered rare earth metals and battery metals, their lithium in particular, along with many examples of visible gold in the samples that had gone to the lab. The company also has the Hurricane project, which it has an option to buy into, and the company's going to be working on this year. That's going to be really exciting because Chief Executive Andrew Haythorpe had joined last year. That's very much his baby. He's very familiar with the territory and familiar with the asset as it's been developed prior to ECR's involvement. So that's really important. But what I think has really engaged investor attention this week is the news from the Creswick license. Now, Creswick is north of the town of Ballarat. There's a famous old gold mine there, narrow vein gold mine, lots of historical workings. And ECR own a property at Brewery Lane, which is in a little town called Springmount. And on that land, they have some historical gold workings. And through working and drilling there previously, some very strong grades were discovered. The company also announced around Christmas time that it had discovered some new parallel gold system that ran parallel to the existing one that had been discovered at Creswick. But what has come back through through extensive field work, soil sampling, are some pretty impressive grades. And the company announced yesterday that boosted its belief that Creswick is host to an extended gold system, with rock chips coming back from the historical gold workings underground at the Brewery Lane property, and also at the new license further south, which the company recently awarded. So we're looking at grades over 0.7 meters, 189.4 grams per ton of gold, and 0.4 meters at 86 grams per ton. So that's on the actual license at the property, and then. In the new license, we have 0.25 meters at 441.2 grams per ton gold, and 140.8 grams per ton gold over 0.15 meters. So, you know, that's commercial grade right there. That's a really important development for the group, and certainly Andrew and the team are very keen to sort of move further. Sample this further, and of course then they'll get the drill rigs down there. With ECR, of course, they have their own drill rig, they have their own Midas drill rig, and there will be another one arriving. I think it's being shipped to Melbourne at the moment, so we'll no doubt hear about that at some point in the next month or so. So of course, once that arrives and is commissioned, they'll have two of their own rigs that they can go and drill at will, as opposed to having to wait and hire contractors and then schedule drilling for later on. They can get on with it straight away, and that's really important. Now, of course, miners, as we've spoken before, John, have taken an absolute hammering. ECR is no exception. The share price is currently 0.67p, and for all those assets I've just outlined, it has a market cap of just 7.8 million. Now, the company raised money last year, so it's got plenty of cash in the bank to undertake all of its exploration activities for this year. It also has some legacy assets that the company is looking to sell that will when that happens, that'll raise further cash. So the company is well funded for its activities, and I think particularly given the schedule the company has this year with those two drilling rigs, I think we're going to hear some pretty tasty developments in the not too distant future. So really excited about the future for ECR in the current year, and I think we're at historical lows at this moment. So, in my opinion, the shares offer a resounding buy opportunity, but that's just my opinion. Please do your own research.
Yes, I mean, I was talking earlier about consumer confidence here in the UK and the AIM market. You know, it's particularly noticeable in the mining sector that, you know, regardless of company news, when we see a deterioration in consumer confidence, it's always a sector that gets very heavily hit, yeah. Particularly in those companies that are in the early stages of exploration. And when consumer confidence picks up and, you know, animal spirits return to the markets, it's always a sector that tends to pick up, irrespective of what's happening at the companies. So if we do see a continued resurgence in consumer confidence and general economic indicators here in the UK, do expect that sector to be one that benefits from that. Of course, there are companies in there which have stronger assets than others. And of course, as Alan said, do your own research in these companies. So just as a reminder of the companies that we discussed today, first up was Barrick Developments with a ticker of BDEV. It was then BP, which of course has a ticker of BP. It was then Deltic Energy, which has a ticker of DLT. And we finished off with ECR Minerals with a ticker of ECR. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks, John.
So just as a note to listeners, do check out the notes of this podcast, because there's going to be a link through to one of our upcoming investor conferences. It's a virtual conference. We've got three different companies presenting on the 22nd of February. That will be the first one of 2023. And over the next month, we actually have four different virtual conferences coming up. So do keep an eye on the events section of the UK Investor Magazine website. It's going to be varied all the way from investment trusts through to growth companies, some listed here in London, some listed overseas. So do keep an eye out for those. Thank you very much to everyone for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.